Yhteistyössä HAM, Helsingin kokoinen taidemuseo. hamhelsinki.fi.
Hyvää iltapäivää, good afternoon everyone, listeners all around the universe, I should say. Today, once again, we will dive into the Ars Fennica 2025 group exhibition in HAM. In this program, you've already heard the interviews of Jani Ruusikka, Hanna Vihriälä and Ragnar Bley. And today I have the honor to talk with Roland Persson. Hey Roland, how are you?
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
You are one of these four nominees for this, at least this Finland's most significant visual arts prize. How does it feel for an artist? I mean, you have also like pretty like extensive career behind you, and now this nomination. What kind of sort of emotions does it sort of gather in your mind to be
for the nominee? I'm honored, of course, and I'm happy for that the Finnish jury also chosen me. Of course, I've been working a lot in Finland. I love Finland very much, and so I'm excited.
Yeah, this
and
is
honored, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, it's at least I think with Ragnar Bley we talked about sort of, because it's a prize, and you know, when there are nominees and prize, there must be some kind of competition. But then when it's in the art context, then it's not really a competition. It's like I don't know how should I even describe it. Anyway, it's a group exhibition. That's what it is actually. And then the winner is decided in February, so there is still time to check everything out. And the exhibition is until the end of March there in HAM, so
yes,
you
yes.
Go and check it out. But when a person comes to the exhibition and walks in front of one of your works, what kind of what's the sort of mental landscape or the concrete landscape? What is sort of in front of the person who comes to see?
So it's I have three pieces there, a free installation, so to speak. The first one is that you might meet first is a horse lying on a grand piano, and so it's a very dramatic piece with a horse, and I cast everything from live things. So if I need a horse, I have to get a horse. I don't sculpture a horse, so to speak. So if I need a cactus, I have to have a cactus. So I went to, for the casting of the horse, I went to a school for veterinaries, for doctors of animals. And they had this horse, and we casted it. And the whole process of casting a newly dead horse is a very strong thing, very emotional. Mm. And so it's very touching, and we were quiet, and you know, it's a sad story, of course, but I tried to put into the sculpture, then you put a distance from the animal, of course, and you make a sculpture of it. You have a distance from a real horse, but the treasure, the sign from the horse is of course there. So the process of casting something can be very dramatic or very non-dramatic. If you cast a glass or something, it's not that dramatic, is it?
Mm,
so,
yeah.
So it's very, very, the variation of the process is very big in my practice. But his horse is on this grand piano. And of course, we had to buy a grand piano as well, a flugel, and cost that. So it's a big, long process for this sculpture. But the why I did it is much because of the Ukraine war, mm-hmm. and so it's a dramatic piece. But try to something process. The impact of from the news and, you know, whatever comes from Ukraine right now. So And that's a sad story, and of course it's a sad sculpture in one way, but it has other qualities that I think, is it dead or is it not dead? Is it? It's also very, very beautiful. So it's I often use that. I can have some very dramatic thing, but also can be very beautiful or even funny, and have the dramatic sad thing but still funny, so I can mix things.
Yeah, there is in many of your works there is this some kind of like a dreamlike layer that it's which is something that sort of already lifts the sort of experience from this everyday life to a little bit to see it in a different light at least, but dreams. Well, how do you like how should I ask this question? Do you use a lot like a sort of this dreamlike material or imagery in your work?
I guess they're often very some direct idea. The cactus is a bunch of cactus that are hanging with the roots going down to small buckets, and that idea come from a photo of like a family standing with the water high up on their chest, and some so the piece is called Waiting for High Water. So the cactus are prepared for high water in some way. That's a kind of an idea that is kind of direct, but it becomes dreamish when I cast things and put it together. And so, of course, sometimes it could start with a dream, but when I cast things and I do it as I do, the dreaminess, the surrealistic things comes there. But it could start with a very, very direct photo of a family standing in water, so it's and the house is filled with water. I mean, that's very so. It's a very double thing of dreaminess and reality. It's mixed together. And
tell us more about the material. Sorry, silicone. You said that you, for example, you made a silicone cast of the horse. So how have you found silicone as a material?
I started with more stone and aluminum and bronze and things, but I'm a painter from the beginning. When I started with doing art, I was a painter, but the media didn't suit me so good. I was breaking brushes, and you know, I was more aggressive when I was doing things. So sculpture was suiting me better in that kind of way. I could be more physical, that kind of thing, but I missed color. So, and I mean, when you cast aluminum for a long time, there's no color at all. So I tried to find the colors, and of course I started with painting the aluminum on the concrete or something, and but it didn't work. It looked like it was painted on. So I was searching for a material that could own, didn't look painted. Then I find silicone, and I put the color in the material, so I could work with transparency and things like that. So that's why I basically use silicone as I do, because I like to paint. I wanted to bring in color in the sculpture. So I see them as a colorful painting sculpture, something like that.
Yeah, also the silicone sort of brings quite interesting layer also, because sort of like you, in your works, nature is very much present, even though it's silicone. It's still like very, could be said like not like realistic depiction of nature, but still there is this tension between like this dreaminess and nature, and then of course like sad feelings. For example, the horse. I think the horse was on top of the grand piano. I think it was quite very, very sad or melancholic, actually. That was maybe the feeling that I got from that work. But yeah, the silicone sort of brings this artificial thing.
Yes, I mean, I think it's also, sometimes it looks real. I mean, when I do in the studio, I can understand what is real and not real. So sometimes silicone can be, as I do it, really realistic. But there's also often something wrong in it. It's also something that doesn't really fit in. And that little thing, I don't know what it is, but there's some gap between the reality of what it looks like and the feeling of it when you look at it.
That's true.
That's a little area of something there. And I see people try to understand what they see and what it is. And is it water? Is it glass? And then they're searching for things in their head. And a very interesting moment of try to understand what we see.
Roland, are in Sweden. You have made a lot of public artworks. You are very known for that in Sweden. And when I saw the video in Ars Fennica website, every nominee has this like a presentation introduction video there. And right in the beginning of your video, you say that everything that happens in a public space is political. And I was immediately also a bit challenged, not really provoked, because I kind of agree on some level with you, but I want to ask you, like, what do you actually mean by this, that everything that happens in a public space is political, even like in galleries or museums?
I was so it's on display on the Ham exhibition. It's also on display. All four of us have this on spot there. I think I started with the things of being personal. So I think, if I remember right, I started with being personal, and that if you're very personal in a public space with a public work, that's kind of a political thing to do. So I think it started a little bit there, and then I spin it off, and by the way, everything is political. So what did I mean with that? I mean, the power when someone decides what's going to be in a specific place, wherever it is, there's some people have decided that, and that's power, right? Power to decide what to put there. So of course that is kind of a political thing in the first place, because someone have decided that this place should be honored art. So you can't go around it, really, if you look at it that kind of way, that someone decides things for how things are in the public space. But as an artist, if you work more with I remember I chose the cushion. My mother had a lot of cushions when I was little, and I borrowed them and had them on this square outside of Stockholm, Sweden. And I recognized them. I grew up with them, so they were very personal for me, and also the connection with my mother and everything. And she hadn't done them, a lot of them, had she done it. So of course there is a very touching thing for me personally, but the private thing in it, and is in that case, I see it as a strong force to have the things that we have, cushions, for example, the broderie of the cushions that my mother made there in the space of the square. It's not pamphlet. It's not something you can read on. It's not political in that way, but it has a strong force in some way. Not so easy to talk about it,
I sort of think that it's about communication and sort of this personal objects communicate with us in a bit different level than, for example, like a portrait of a president or something. So
that's a very clear political thing to do, isn't it?
But
a cushion has also a power of something that could be political, but it's
definitely
not obvious. But it has because and the environment around it. If that is hard, or so this distance between the cushions, the soft cushions, and the houses, really some is striking in that case.
Roland Persson, I have been talking with you for, I don't know, maybe soon too long to take in your time. Because I remember that you are in you are in the Royal Academy to like teach a course there, and I'm sort of stealing your students' time.
So actually, you do,
So
they manage.
But one last question. So in Finland, in your works are present in or presented or, and also present in HAM Helsinki Art Museum right now and until the 29th of March. But where else can we see your works? For example, in Scandinavia or other places.
In Helsinki, I work a lot with a gallery, Helsinki Contemporary Gallery. So there is some things on display there, and I work a lot with them. So they're more in Sweden this summer, and Valdemars Udde is going to be group exhibition. It's a place outside of Stockholm in Mars, I think. So otherwise, it's you have to go to Sweden, I guess.
For
public art.
We can start from HAM at least. So there's
and then HAM, of course. And I'm very happy for the HAM, and hope people will go and see it.
Yeah, and the space is I think it's very nicely sort of curated, and how the works are in dialogue together with different artists. I think it's a wonderful place to sort of, for example, get to know your work or the other nominees' work. It's a great place for that. But hey, Roland Persson, thank you for having a moment with us, and best of December and the end of 2025.
Thank you very much.
Dark, but it's getting lighter. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Thank you. Bye bye.
Yhteistyössä HAM, Helsingin kokoinen taidemuseo, hamhelsinki.fi.